Thanks, Vivian. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Just to let you know, night two. Dog calming music was a success. It was a success. Two nights in a row. Yes. Thanks, Susie. It's there on YouTube if you have a dog that's waking you up in the middle of the night. Whatever they've done with it, and it's obviously they can hear stuff in it because dogs have different ways of hearing. They hear different frequencies than we do, so they're hearing something that we don't hear. And it puts them to sleep and keeps them to sleep. He says, two. I know it's not great, just two, but anyway. Small victories. Yeah, that's great. That's good. And on animals, Cat Lady is a new book by Dawn O'Porter. And she's going to be talking to us today about that and her cats and her pets and all that sort of thing. And after 4 o'clock, it's book season. You probably cop that listening to the radio. It's book. They all come out at this time of the year for the Christmas market because Christmas for booksellers is like Christmas. Oh yeah, it is Christmas. But they sell something like 70% of their books around Christmas. So that's why they're all around out around this time of the year. Anyway, Mick Kelly or Michael Kelly, who's been on the show regularly, has a new book. He's the DIY man, Grow It Yourself. And this is a lovely book. It's a really lovely book and it's a great reference book. And I think it's a book that I'm going to have for years and years and years. And it'll be well thumbed and there'll be notes and there'll be bits of muck on it and everything because it's the DIY Diaries, A Year of Growing and Cooking. And all the tips you need from Michael Kelly, who's been growing his own for the last 20 years. And he's in after 4 o'clock. So if you have any questions for him, ray@rte.ie. Now, on Monday, we spoke to Liz Collins and her daughter, Claudia. And it was a heartbreaking interview, I have to say, like heartbreaking. Claudia has been living with EB for the last 18 years. And Liz has been minding her. And unfortunately, when it comes to EB and Claudia's very severe form of EB, minding means inflicting pain because Claudia's bandages have to be changed 3 or 4 times a week. And when that happens, there's a lot of pain involved. And it's completely against a parent's nature to inflict pain on their child who they love. But anyway, Liz and Claudia told us that story. And Liz mentioned that Deborah Ireland, who's the support charity for families and people who suffer with EB in this country, she mentioned that Deborah Ireland had requested €1 million for EB care from the government, but they didn't get it. So we sent an email to the Department of Health saying that Liz has said this, and what have you got to say in response? And they sent us a response. And they said that EB places a substantial medical, social and financial burden on patients and carers. And we heard that firsthand from Liz. The Department of Health fully appreciates the difficulties experienced by patients suffering from this painful condition. And I'm just synopsizing this. At present, we have two centre approach to treating patients. There are approximately 158 patients currently registered between Children's Health Ireland and St James's Hospital. CHI, that's Children's Health Ireland, currently have one permanent clinical nurse specialist who provides home care and outreach care. An important example of this work includes securing home nursing care packages ranging from 9 hours to 20 hours for patients. In addition, CHI are in the final stages of recruiting an advanced nurse practitioner role in dermatology. There was no mention of the €1 million. And Jimmy Fearn, who's the CEO of Deborah Ireland, contacted the show to say that they have received emails from the Department of Health asking Deborah Ireland to submit a pre-budget outline of what they want. So something happened there. Whether anything will happen. The other side of the budget remains to be seen, but we'll keep you posted on that. Yesterday, we spoke to Jeff Kinney. Now, people of a certain age and parents of people with a certain age or grandparents of grandchildren of a certain age will know Jeff Kinney's name. He's the man who has given us The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and he's on book 17. And he was on yesterday, and we invited our listeners to send him in questions. And we had Dunica and Sarah live, and then we had loads of voice notes from various people. Anyway, Sarah Healy from Belturbet was so excited. She got back onto us overnight and she says, yesterday your researcher Niamh producer, invited me onto your show to speak with you and Jeff. Thank you for that amazing opportunity. After all that, I got about 100 messages on my mammy's phone congratulating me. I'm so sorry. I was so excited that I forgot to ask my question. I know it doesn't really count now, but my question was, are books based on real life events or is it all fictional? I'm still thinking about it, who I should invite to come to the RDS and Jeff show. I still can't believe I got to talk to my favourite author. I can't. And I can't wait to tell all my friends. What I'm really saying is thanks a million. Goodbye, Sarah. So she was brilliant because she was wow. And she was just very excited. And this is Sarah. She sent us in a voice note originally and then we decided to have her on live. But we just played the original voice note.
Hello, Jeff. My name is Sarah Healy. I'm 10 years old. I'm from Cavan and I go to Milltown NS. I love Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It's not just that it's hilarious, but it's so relatable. Reading the world from Rowley's perspective and Greg's, they're so different, yet both so relatable. My question is, were your books based off real events and your characters, or were they just made up? Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye, Sarah. Bye. And Sarah, and like everybody who was on with Jeff yesterday, was invited to, or were invited to, the show in the RDS, which is Jeff and Loaded Diaper, a band which features in the books. And that's on November the 14th. It's a Monday and it's after school time and tickets are available on Ticketmaster. And I think when you get your ticket, you get a book as well. Not a free book because you're sort of paying for it in the ticket price, but it's all included. Sonia was on How Cute and Funny Were All Those Children? Thoroughly enjoyed it, says Sonia. And she probably didn't even know who Jeff Kinney was, but it just was one of those, it was 9 or 10 minutes of radio which just jumped up at you with all those great voices from around the country on voice note. The Zoom call could change. Yeah, the virtual meeting that we all became very used to during lockdown. Have you heard about this holoportation? There's a product called Proto M, and it's a box, right? It's about 2 foot tall. And at the other end of it, there's a camera, but it's a special type of camera, sort of a 3D camera. And if I'm talking to you on this Proto M device, you will see me in the box, 2 foot tall, head to toe, but I'd be like a hologram. And what they say is, the people who made it, and they would say that, is that there's a stronger connection if we can see the totality of somebody and if we see them in 3D as opposed to 2D. Like when you do the Zoom call or the Teams thing, it's from the waist up and it's 2D. This thing would be, albeit smaller, 2 foot tall, it would be head to toe and 3D. And it's the future, they're saying. The CEO of Proto-M, David Nussbaum, is saying that very shortly, this is the way world leaders will be meeting, virtually. You heard it here first. Oh no. Now, teleportation, there's the thing I'd sign up for. You know, because nobody likes going to the airport, do they? Like, and you like a bit of sun. So if you could press a button in your sitting room and you just ended up sitting there to sitting on a couch in Lanzarote or Tenerife or Spain or wherever you want to go. Now, I'd sign up for that, teleportation. But holoportation, I'm not too sure of. 51551 rayatrte.ie. They're just telling me now that Colin Farrell's jumper is here from... It's sort of Radio 1 sponsored by the Banshees of Inishearn. That's the way it works sometimes, because we plan a couple of days in advance. Liveline react to events that are happening. So as it happened, they were talking about it today. We're going to be talking about it as well. And we've Delia and Emer. And Delia is the lady who knitted Colin Farrell's jumper from the movie. Anyway, we have it here. I'm going to get a chance to wear it. I'll be wearing the jumper that Colin Farrell wore. And he might win an Oscar. 51551 rayatrte.ie. Now, congratulations to the cricket team. So it was West Indies first. And now they have beaten the English in the T20 World Cup. And they won it because the match was called off due to rain and they introduced the Duckworth-Lewis Stern method. And I thought, what is that? How does that happen? How can that possibly happen? And then I remember there was a band, wasn't there, called the Duckworth-Lewis Method, and it was Neil Hannon and Tom Walsh, and Tom is on the line. Hello, Tom.
I'm on the line.
He's on the line. Now just the Duckworth-Lewis Method, it was a sort of a super group, yourself from Pugwash and Neil Hannon from Divine Comedy, and you were brought together because of your passion for cricket.
Yeah, it was a super group, which meant I ate all the soup.
Right. Okay.
And it's great to hear from you, Ray. Anyway, nice to hear from you. It's been a while.
Yes, great to hear from you, Thomas. Yeah.
And Neil sends his love, by the way.
Right, okay.
So he couldn't get on, but he sent a little message and he says, give my love to Le Darcy.
Right, thank you very much, Lana.
And he says that he hasn't been watching it because he's working very hard, but he says the more he doesn't watch it, the more they're winning.
It's his fault that they're winning.
He's gonna stay not watching, he said. So that's the latest from Mr. Lewis.
But, yeah. but you did watch it.
We came back from a session for a Christmas song I did, Bubbush.
Right.
A Christmas song for Irish epilepsy, actually. And we were in the car and we heard some cricket stuff on the radio. Neil said, oh, look, you won't want to hear this, but can I have a listen to this? And I went, why wouldn't I want to hear it? I love cricket, blah, 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 blah. And that was it. We became firm friends over cricket and the love of ELO. And we just started to write some songs. But we were writing songs for the Kylie Minogue and Tom Jones, True Neil. Now, they didn't take them on.
Yes.
But some of those tunes ended up being Duckworth Lewis tunes, which is funny enough.
And Duckworth and Lewis.
Yeah.
They were who?
Well, they're basically two, well, I'd say professory people, yes, mathematician people, but as well as being cricket fans anyway. Basically, Ray, you're going to ask the question and I have to answer it while I'm in the flow. if it rains and you've got 50 runs playing cricket in the sun.
Yes.
And you did it in 20 balls. And then it rained and you needed to get 50 runs, but you only had lesser time because the game was going to end and the sky was going to, you know, get dark
and all that stuff.
So they equate the amount of runs you'd need in the lesser time.
Aha.
So you might need 30 runs as opposed to 50, and you can win by getting 30, and the other team, even though they got 50, even though they got more, they'd lose.
It's like the equivalent of modelling. We all became familiar with statistical modelling. We all became familiar with that during COVID. So that's what it's like. These two boys, they've worked out a formula, and you can put in the number of runs that the person has, the amount of time that they would have had if it didn't rain, and then they decide who wins. And Ireland won!
Ireland won. Yeah. And to be honest with you, they were a far better team anyway, and they were. So it just proves the theory right, really, because they were the better team. They were on top. They were playing great. They seemed to up their game against England a lot.
Yes,
brilliant.
Yes, well, look,
I just wish we wouldn't lose to. We've
a history, Thomas.
Yes, we have a history. Yes. but I was just thinking actually as well. You were talking about that holoportation.
Yes.
I'm not going to fit in that box. I'm telling you now. Tell me now, Ray, it's not going to happen.
two foot tall and a foot wide, yeah. I don't think many people will. Listen, Thomas, you've sent us in the Pugwash stuff that you're working on, and I liked it so much that I'm going to play it now.
Is that okay? It's a premiere.
It's not released till next year, 2023.
Yes,
and thanks for explaining the Duckworth Lewis method, which allowed Ireland to beat England this morning.
I was crap at maths in school anyway.
Right. See you, Thomas. Have a good
day. Ray.
See you now. Bye. 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 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Pugwash. Good day for me. And we'll let you know when that's available to download sometime in the new year. Teleportation. Are you crazy? Even if you could transport molecules from A to B, the probability that they would be reconstructed in the right order is very much stacked against you. You'd have a better chance of surviving a nuclear disaster than teleportation. Well, I wasn't serious. You know, like teleportation, time travel, these are things we dream of and watch on movies. Never going to happen. Never. It's as likely as Ireland win the Eurovision. Yeah. Clipology, right? It's a new game. I think it's online, but I think they've copied us, reeling in the ears, because it's all about clips, playing clips and identifying voices and all that sort of thing. And as part of their promo, they've done research on the most misquoted movie quotes. See, you get that? Misquoted movie quotes. So we all say, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? From Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. Didn't say that. That's not how it went.
Magic mirror on the wall, who is the fairest one of all?
See, it was magic mirror, just so you know. Build it and they will come. Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner. No, they won't. He will come, not they.
If you build it, he will come.
See, it's important for all the pedants out there. And then, this is my favourite, "Play It Again, Sam," from Casablanca. That was that, those words were never uttered by Humphrey Bogart or what's Lauren Bacall. This is how it went in the movie.
"Play it once, Sam. For all time's sake."
"I don't know what you mean, Miss Elsa."
"Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by."
"Oh, I can't remember it, Miss Elsa. I'm a little rusty on it."
See, she never said, "Play it again, Sam." Anyway, Clipology, we'll be looking out for that, and we'll have our legal people making sure that they're not copying our lovely little quiz, our daily quiz, reeling in the ears. Yep, we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions on clips of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize, and this week it's a two-night stay in Carton House for two people. And Carton House is a Fairmont hotel, the first in the country. It's surrounded by over 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, lakes, and the meandering River Rye runs near the Carton House as well, making it the most picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay just 25 minutes from Dublin. So much to discover, and as I say, a two-night stay for two people. And here is your qualifying question. Your qualifying question: who did Ireland defeat in the Cricket World Cup earlier this morning? Who did Ireland defeat in the Cricket World Cup earlier this morning? 0818715925. 0818715925. And if you want to find out more about Carton House, it's cartonhouse.com. Good luck at that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, prepare yourself for more talk about Martin McDonagh's The Banshees of Inisherin. Massive hit at the Irish box office, as you would have heard Joe say during Liveline there. Barbara Power of the Irish Independent celebrated the needlework, which is featured in the movie, and it's the work of octogenarian. They have to say octogenarian. I wouldn't have said that, Delia. But the octogenarian, Delia Berry, she's the woman responsible for the jumpers. And Delia joins me in studio. How are you doing, Delia?
Hello.
And also we have Emer Niveuil Downing, who is the costume designer on the movie. Hello, Emer.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
And now, there's a bit of talk in Liveline about the costumes. And you pride yourself on getting things right, Emer, don't you?
Oh, no. Am I in trouble?
No, I don't know. Somebody was saying that maybe they were a little bit too colourful.
Oh, really? Yes, yeah. I missed that. Well, the thing is, I suppose, with a film like The Banshees of Inisherin, you know, it's not, I worked on Michael Collins and The Wind That Shakes the Barley, so I think thankfully I worked on those because they're much more kind of accurate depictions of the time in the sense of colour and all of that. But I think what's really important to say about The Banshees of Inisherin, you know, the research is all done, the silhouettes are all correct, and really the whole film, it's not a story that you're going to really read about in the Irish Independent tomorrow. You know, it's all, there's a heightened reality.
Yes.
There's a theatricality. There's a dramatization. And Martin wanted to create something that was cinematic within the landscape of Achill and Inishmore. Yeah. So with that in mind, you know, we wanted to create characters that were slightly larger than life and that people wouldn't be expecting to kind of meet these people every day of the week.
Yeah.
So there is, it's designed. There's no hiding from that.
But it is inspired, and you did reference photographs.
Totally, 100%.
The photographs were black and white, were they?
They were, yes, they were.
So this particular jumper, and I couldn't believe it when people came in and said, "The jumper, you have to see the jumper." It's a jumper that Colin Farrell's character Porrick wears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you describe it to us, Delia? For people who haven't seen it.
Well, it's basically just moss stitch panel, kind of a cross stitch.
Yeah.
And a diamond that's kind of, it's horizontal, really.
Right.
And it has a collar.
It has a collar.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a jumper with a collar.
Yeah.
Yeah, the collar seems to be what's attracting attention.
they're talking about the collar.
Yeah. I can't see where all the fuss is about.
Would you not concentrate on his acting, for God's sake? So they mentioned your age, and that's, people have been making a lot of that. I don't care what age you are, Delia. I just love your work. So how did it happen? You and Emer go back how long?
About five years, I think.
Little Women, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We did a production of Little Women for the BBC. It was a three-part. Yeah. Actually, Angela Lansbury was in it, who just passed away.
And that was 2017.
Yeah, that was 2017.
Yeah.
And it was Delia's neighbour, Judith Devlin, who works with me all the time from Greystones. Mm-hmm. And Judith introduced me to Delia. Mm. And just for Little Women, we did lots of scarves and mittens and kind of woolly hats and things for all those kind of snow scenes, you know. But we never forgot Delia. We came back to her last year.
So you obviously were impressed by her work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely loved
Judith
Delia.
Judith was friendly with someone from Greystone's cancer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have a connection there because you lost your husband in 2010.
Yes, I have, yeah.
And they were very good to you during
that. They were very good to me, yes.
And you started knitting for them, did you? Or?
Well, I do little angels for the babies who are baptised in the parish.
Right.
And the agreement is the church makes a donation to Greystone's cancer.
Ah, very good. Very
it's payback time. Yes, like, for they were good to me.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So have you done this sort of thing before then? Because usually you'd have a pattern. So you were doing this from an old black and white photograph.
No, this was the first.
Right, okay. So that's a challenge, isn't it?
It was. Yeah. I like a challenge. Mm. So, but that was a big one.
Yeah. So black and white. So and obviously you
decided that. It was no bother to her at all. Right. She was amazing.
It was hard to see the stitches from the photograph.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you used a magnifying glass.
If I had the jumper now as it is, it would be no problem.
Of course.
To copy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, Ray, Delia made jumpers for Brendan Gleeson, Colin Farrell and Barry Keoghan. Now, they're all different heights, different sizes. Yeah. So if you look at Barry and you look at Brendan, you know, they're completely different. Yeah. And we were just giving Delia measurements and saying, can you make it this long? And his chest is this size and don't make it oversized and keep the sleeves kind of slim. And it was no bother to her at all. You know, she was just amazing.
Yeah. You don't know what all this fuss is about, Delia.
No, I don't. No. I can't see it.
Like, who rang you this morning now, for example?
Well, I didn't have any calls this morning, but BBC...
Last night, BBC Radio Ulster.
Radio Ulster.
And were Vanity Fair not on to you?
Vanity Fair...
They did the article, yeah. I did an interview with Vanity Fair last week. Yeah. Okay. But it's all about the jumpers.
Is it?
It's all about the jumpers.
So can you scale up? You know what I mean? Could you do 100 in over a weekend or something like that? There was a band.
I'm not going to say no problem.
Because, like, people fell in love with your jumpers even
they
on
did.
Set.
They
Brendan Gleeson fell in love with them.
He did, yeah.
So what did he ask you to do?
He asked me to knit two for him.
Right. And he was spotted by a friend of yours?
Yes, on some television programme, and he was wearing one of the ones I knitted for him.
Look at you.
Because it was the... There was only the green one in the film, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And then you knit him a lovely kind of a bluey colour, kind of a turquoise, and a similar to what you're wearing, a kind of a pinky purpley one.
Right.
But I had the size then, so that wasn't,
wasn't a problem. Yes. And I'll be able to try that on, will I? Well, can I get my picture? Is that
just
okay?
You. Just me, you,
just
Ray.
Me. Okay,
just
yes,
you.
Yeah.
So Colin then Farrell, it's going back into the archive. Yeah.
And did you knit two for him? Because somebody was suggesting he would have had a stunt double and you'd have to have one. No.
No, he didn't have a stunt double. But
I did knit two.
Yeah. So the first one that you knit, Delia, was kind of a brighter red.
It was, yes.
And we decided, you know, when we kind of put it on, Colin, it was too bright, you know, and we knew that in the... You know, on the Aran Islands and with the light, it was going to pop too much. So we decided to go for a slightly darker
colour.
Tone
it down a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And you've knit since you were young, but when the hubby died, it became more important in your life.
Yeah, it was more therapeutic, really.
Yeah.
Stopped me from getting bored and depressed. And
There's a mindfulness about knitting, isn't there? You know, because people talk about mindfulness.
I had a heart bypass, so I have a checkup every year.
Right.
And the cardiologist said, I told him about the knitting. I thought it might be too much. And he said not to give it up because it helps you with dementia.
Yeah.
You won't get dementia. Yes. You're keeping your brain.
Yes, going. And you stay active. I know you walk every week.
I walk,
week to
I walk.
Have a cup of coffee.
You do my friend Teresa.
Do you do Wordle or Sudoku or what do you do?
I do... Any puzzle I can do,
right,
I can get my hands on.
Yeah, yeah. But that's an intricate thing. Can you hand it over to me there?
So,
I'm fascinated by the fact because the colour looks like a luxury.
the collar, is
yes, it looks like a luxury.
I know, it's really amazing.
I would have thought that everything was functional back then.
Well,
I don't know why.
It is functional, of course, because it's a wool, and wool back then would still have had the oils from the sheep, you know, and so
I'm looking at it there.
They were almost waterproof, really, you know. But the thing is, I have the photograph, you know, of the fisherman with the jumper, with the knitted collar, and I've only seen one reference, and it's absolutely incredible. And
I'm just wondering,
it's just
because
so beautiful.
I'm playing with it here, and I've turned up the collar, and when you flap it over like that, it's nearly like a turtleneck or a pole neck.
Isn't it? Actually,
yeah,
maybe that was
definitely down. I suppose at that time in the 1920s, you know, shirts with collars. Well, yeah, so. The shirts were a separate thing. Sorry, the collars and shirts were separate things. So the collar was a starched collar. It was really stiff. It was like cardboard, and that would have been laundered separately. And the collar would just have been worn by, you know, it's like the kind of blue collar,
going
white
out,
collar.
Yes, yeah,
and, you know, so workmen and people on the Aran Islands would have worn shirts without collars.
Like
just
a grandfather
the neckband.
Collar, yes. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Like a grandfather, what we call now a grandfather shirt.
Yes.
So maybe there were just, you know, somebody
wanted a collar.
Wanted a collar
wanted
on their jumper.
Collar.
And then somebody luckily took a photograph. And
what's it like seeing your work on the big screen? Because, you know, it's big, isn't it?
There was one funny bit. Barry's character, Dominic.
Yeah.
He was pulling the collar like this. Don't do that.
You're saying, don't pull the collar.
Yeah, Irish mommy.
Yeah, that one looked well.
Yeah, it did. I'm just looking at a photograph there.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely.
So,
yeah.
Loads of mentions of Oscars, Emer. Have you been here before?
Oh, not at all.
No.
And I'd be in Delia's camp. I'd be saying, what's all the fuss about?
Right.
You know, I mean, I think Martin deserves a film. I hope it gets Best Picture. I hope Colin or Brendan or some of the actors are recognised. I think as a piece of drama, it's an ensemble piece. Everybody can see that, you know, and it's a masterclass in acting. It's a masterclass in storytelling. It's a masterclass in directing, cinematography, you know. And
I can't wait to see it.
I know some
so
people won't like it, but I think a lot of people will. And I hope people will take something from it, you know.
Well, they'll probably take a bit of fashion from it, won't they?
Well, some people will.
Yeah, yeah. Won't
There's
they?
No harm in that either. But it's, you know.
Because remember, who wore the Aran sweater? Well, I know Taylor Swift wore it, but did somebody wear it before her?
There's something in Knives Out, which I actually haven't seen, but they were referencing that as well. And I'll have to go and watch. You go to the Banshees this weekend and I'll watch Knives Out.
Great.
We can have a chat.
My grandmother used to knit. She was brilliant. But sometimes she'd get it slightly wrong because, you know, we weren't that well off. So you'd see somebody in the schoolyard with something, you come home and describe it to her.
Yeah.
And I remember there was what was trendy at the time was black, and then it had a red stripe bordered by two white thin white lines.
That's right.
And you two reds and then the four white little whites. But when I described it to Granny, there must have been a breakdown in communication. So I got the thick red and just one white on each. So it was unique. It wasn't like everybody else's.
Yeah, yeah.
It was something lovely about getting,
yeah,
isn't
there
it?
Yeah, there is.
Because it's a labour of love.
It is.
It's a labour of love.
And I think Colin loved that. Yeah.
Never seen those stitches before. That
No,
it's done
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
That pattern before.
And I think Colin, you know, and Brendan and Barry, Barry loved the jumpers as well. And I think they just loved that. They really, really loved that they were hand-knit. And when we told them about Delia as well, you know, they just really, really appreciated the craft that went into making
You were under pressure, Delia.
I was under pressure. Definitely.
I don't know how your cardiologist would feel about that. But
we might be in trouble with the cardiologist.
You must come in again, Emer, and tell us about
it,
because I know you're trying to archive
we'll
costumes
talk,
from,
be great to talk about that sometime.
From Irish cinema, and that'd be lovely. Thanks so much for coming in, Delia.
You're welcome.
I'm going to try that on, get my photograph taken with it and you, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, and thanks, Emer.
Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you.
Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551@rte.ie. Marion Keyes has described Donna Porter's latest book, Cat Lady, as unputdownable. if that's even a word. And we'd agree with her. We would, yes. In the story, we meet Mia, a high-flying career woman who is devoted to her beloved cat, Pigeon. Yes, you heard me correctly, a cat called Pigeon, all while trying to juggle being a good wife and a stepmother. When things unravel, and they do, Mia needs to confront her past in order to move into her future and find her true place in the world. Dawn O'Porter joins me now from a studio in London. Hello, Dawn O'Porter.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
This is book number what?
8. So it's the 5th fiction.
Right. The last time we spoke to you was about your accidental memoir.
My accidental memoir,
yes. Is that what you called it? You wrote it during lockdown, yes. Yeah.
Or we could also call it my lockdown pay packet, which I just said yes to anything for.
Did you?
I know. God, I did talk to you for that, didn't I?
Yes. That was very revealing, which we'll get to later on. But first this, the cat lady. You say at the back of the book, and this isn't the one that people will pick up in the shops, but it says, behind every stereotype, there's a story. And of course, in writing, they always tell you to write about what you know, and you are a sort of a cat lady.
I mean, definitely a cat lady. Right. I've grew up with cats, and I got my first cat when I was 24, Lilu, that I had for 16 years. And now I have 2 rescue cats, Myrtle and Boo. And truly, I am at my most happiest when I'm just alone in my room with my cats.
Sniff, Nin, Tiku, Minu, Acre, Fluke, Twiglet, Lilu, Potato, Myrtle and Boo. That's your full list of cats. And you dedicate the book. Some of those are dogs. Right.
Yeah, that's all the pets I've ever had. I'd like to also add on the end, about a month after I wrote that, we adopted 2 dogs called Meatloaf and Puffin, who I should also add onto that list.
And their noses are going to be out of joint because they weren't in the dedication.
I know.
Yeah, because usually you're either a cat person or a dog person. Are the dogs compromised or are you both or what?
I'm both. I do think if I had to choose, I would probably choose cats, but I hopefully will never have to choose.
Right.
But I mean, I love my dogs. My dogs are my children. I adore them. And I'm a crazy cat and dog lady.
Pigeon the cat. I once had a rat called Chicken and people thought I was a bit crazy. So I was it was nice to see that you had called a cat by another animal's name, which is and that's revealed in the book why you call it Pigeon.
Yes.
So the other thing, everyone is playing a part, is at the front of the book here, and the book is a reminder that we never know what's going on in other people's lives, because Mia, the protagonist, it appears that she has the world at her feet, everything's going swimmingly, very successful, good looking, tall, all the good stuff.
It does, and I think it was quite fun to write the idea of a character who kind of has everything that she's supposed to have, but isn't necessarily massively fulfilled. And I think after the pandemic, a lot of people realised that that was the situation that they were in. So many articles about people quitting their jobs and leaving marriages and like making big decisions after they had this kind of moment to reflect. So that kind of inspired the idea of someone who's living the life that they should be living as opposed to the life that they want to be living. So Mia is quite good at living the life that she should be living, and it's all going well until it isn't. And as it all falls away bit by bit, she lands in a much better place at the end, but not necessarily what other people might think is better, but what is better for her.
Yeah. And of course, she has learned to pretend from an early age.
Yes, she has. I mean, she comes from a difficult past. Her mother died. Her dad was really not very nice to her. And she kind of was never comfortable in the place that she was. And I think when you come from a past like that, you make do a lot more than someone who comes from a place where they were very comfortable and welcome. And I think as a grown up, that makes her almost think, well, this is nice and it's safe, so it will do.
Compromise, compromise, compromise.
Yeah.
Because
this is not autobiographical. I feel like I have to say that I'm very, very, very happy in my home life.
Although Chris doesn't like cats, and that's public knowledge.
That is not true.
He
didn't really know if he liked cats or not until he lived with my crazy Siamese. And then he fell in love with cats. And now he is a great, loving, very affectionate cat dad.
And would he say the same if I asked him? Or is indifference a thing? And is indifference okay when it comes to cats?
Listen, he might make you want to think he's indifferent, but he's not. I've seen him. He'll be like, packages will arrive at the house, and I'll be like, what's that? And he's bought them a lovely new bed or some toys or some lovely new food. I'm like, oh, right, yeah. So you don't like cats.
Now, sort of a spine that goes through the book is this support group for people who've lost pets,
yes,
who are grieving. Does such a thing exist?
It does. And actually, about... But 20 years ago, maybe, I don't know, actually, a long time ago, I was in New York and I was doing different self-help groups to write about on my blog. I did things like laughter yoga and sound healing. And I found one group that was a pet support group. And I thought, oh, ha ha, this will be a funny story. So I went to this pet support group and it was one of the most emotional, saddest circles of people I've ever sat in. These poor people had lost their pets and that no one cares. No one will give me... No one would talk to me about it because no one seems to think this is a valid excuse or reason to be this sad. And so I sat with these people while they discussed their grief, and I walked away going, I could never write about them in a, you know, in an article bloggy type way like I had intended to. But I've held on to that group for all this time, and I knew that I wanted to shine a light on it at some point. I think now, especially since the pandemic, most of the groups are virtual, but they absolutely exist. If you lose a pet and you go online, you will find people to talk to specifically about the fact that you've lost a pet. It's a lovely community of people who all appreciate how hard it is.
You singled out Lilu for honorary mention there. Is she the cat you had for the longest?
Yeah, so she was my cat of 16 years. She died in 2020.
Okay, so how was that for you then?
It was awful, and I was... absolutely heartbroken. It's very sudden. It just all happened over the course of about 5 hours and very dramatic. And I was just so sad. And this cat felt like so much more than just a cat. She seemed to define my entire adult life until that point. I traveled the world with her. I didn't go anywhere without her. We were like joined at the hip. And when she died, it was just a huge loss. Everything about my life kind of changed. And I was very lucky. I have really lovely friends who really, you know, it was still in lockdown, so they couldn't come and see me, but they would leave gifts on my doorstep and like calling me and allowing me kind of time to talk about it, which was very, very, very sweet. And I just thought how sad it would be if you didn't have those people in your life to look after you when something that sad happens. And that was what inspired the idea of Cat Lady.
What month was it in 2020? Can you remember?
It was September.
September. Right, okay. And you'd lost a very good friend early that year.
I had, yeah.
And you organised, and you and other people organised, a celebration of Caroline Flack's life this summer.
We did. We organised a festival called Flackstock because Caroline loved festivals, and that's some of the happiest moments of my life were at festivals with Caroline. And so when she died afterwards, it was the pandemic and we couldn't all get together to do that thing that you need to do when you lose someone, of just be together and celebrate their life and just talk about them. And so we thought, well, when we were able to, why don't we just give her our own festival? So Flackstock was born, and it was absolutely incredible. So good that we're talking about doing it every year.
And it was comedy and music and memories and a celebration of a life.
It was. We had Ronan Keating performed for us, and he was so incredible. It was like he didn't just come and sing a couple of songs. He came and sang at like 100%. He gave everything he had. Everyone there was singing along with him. He got us all on stage. We were all singing. I never knew that one of the best moments of my life was going to happen to Ronan Keating, Life is a Roller Coaster, but it absolutely did. And I just love him for it. But everyone that performed for us just gave it 100%. And everyone there came with such a supporting attitude. And we raised loads of money for mental health charities as well.
Brilliant. Mia, just we're going between, you know, real life and fiction here, but Mia has her mental health issues,
yes,
which are dealt with in the book, and she attempts to take her own life. Was that difficult to write for you?
It was difficult to write, and also it was actually based on something that happened with a friend of mine, if something very similar happened to her many years ago. And so I knew that this was a real scenario, even though it might feel unbelievable. But I, obviously, Caroline dying put suicide into my life, and I just wanted to put it into a book in some way, because I think about it all the time now, and I have a, you know, it's something that now I'm so much more aware of than I was before. But I think it's really good to hear positive stories about how people have you know, whose lives have improved and how what they've gone on to achieve after an attempt like that. So that's that was Mia's history.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because particularly if you're close to somebody, it's the what ifs, isn't it? What if I said this? What if I did that? What if I was there? What if I sent an email or a text or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I go between believing that I could have stopped it and knowing that I absolutely couldn't. So, and I think that anyone who's gone through it will feel exactly the same way. But it's, yeah, it's just, there's it's a way that people that you love die, and there's just so many more emotions connected to it than there would be if people die, you know, of an illness. Or, which they do. That is what's happening. They're dying of an illness. And that's the way that we have to start understanding it better. But it's, I mean, it's a very, you don't just grieve. There's a lot more going on.
This is an odd question, but did you feel her presence at Flagstock?
Absolutely, she was there with us. And that's what made the day so joyous. And it was like feeling her energy again and feeling her spirit and her joy was absolutely what the day felt like. It was not a sad day at all.
Yeah. Just, you mentioned Ronan Keating, and he presents The One Show. And you'll be a pub quiz question now, you know. What was the lineup? What was the lineup on The One Show when it appeared on BBC Two?
Oh yeah, I know. Well, there was some big news that day. I literally landed in London after a long haul flight. Turned the news on in my hotel room just as Liz Truss is saying, and I resigned. And I was like, what happened? Like, I was so out of touch with it all. And I went on The One Show that night, and so we got bumped onto BBC Two. But
that was you were in the news as a result. You know, you're in the news as a result. Yeah. So what about books and TV and scripts and movies? Is that something that's in the pipeline?
I'm about to go, when I've done this book tour, I'm going to go back and I have to write the pilot script of my first book, Paper Aeroplanes, because that's been picked up for TV. And that doesn't mean it will be on TV. It means that we're, you know, starting to look if it would work on TV. And then as soon as I'm done that, I'll be back into my next novel. Fiction writing books is number one job. Anything else is if I have the time.
And you have, as they say in Boyle County Roscommon, it seems that you have the crack writing books. And I know it's work, but you enjoy it.
I love it. I mean, my friends will tell me that I don't enjoy it because when I'm on a deadline, I'm awful.
Yes.
But I do. I love it. And whenever I get to the end of a book, I just feel so lucky that I can't believe that it's my actual job. And I'm here promoting Cat Lady now. And I have moments where I'm like, how does this work? I'm so, so, so lucky to be able to do it. But I do enjoy it. It took a long time to enjoy the writing process, but I definitely, book by book, enjoy it more. And also, it's like anything, you feel like you're getting better at it. And that's a lovely feeling. So I'm definitely, my imposter syndrome has gone, which is quite a relief.
Brilliant. And it is, it's what word do they use now in 2022? Dawn O'Porter, saucy, racy, what
it's just very Dawn O'Porter.
Oh, it's very,
I think.
Dawn O'Porter, right, okay. There are some very Dawn O'Porter bits in the book. And fans, viewers, of course, would expect that and enjoy it. And that's good. I was thinking, because you've done podcasts and you've guested on podcasts, why don't yourself and Chris do a podcast?
Well, we did, during lockdown, did a little one for my, that you could only listen to if you subscribed to my blog. And that was just basically us on our back deck drinking margaritas and talking about the day. But I'm quite happy for us. You know, we spend a lot of time together, Ray. I don't think we need to add working with each other into that.
But here's the thing, I just say it, because my wife and I do one. It's a hobby, right? It's half an hour a week. But it's actually, it's brilliant. And I think it's going to save us loads of money on therapy down the line.
Well, that's a good idea. I do always joke to Chris. I'm always like, you know, we could be the next Richard and Judy if we just try. Yeah. And he's like, get away from me.
Take that microphone
would be really
away
fun.
From my mouth, yeah.
I just don't know what we would talk about. What it would be.
Yeah. So, and this part of it as well, you're saying you're on a promotional tour, which involves like hundreds of interviews, talking to people you half know. And them asking you awkward questions. And what do you do? Do you just get in the moment, or how do you cope with that?
Well, I like it. I don't do this very often. There's basically a week or 10 days of maybe every 2 years where I'm out there doing this kind of stuff. So I just really enjoy it. HarperCollins treat me like a rock star, which I fully embrace. Yeah. And what I love about it, Ray, I'm here for 2 weeks, the longest I've ever been away from the kids, and I'm just trying to really, really enjoy it. And I'm... I'm not responsible for myself. All I have to do is get dressed in the morning and talk, but somebody else is responsible for getting me to where I need to be. And it's just, I feel like I'm on holiday and my schedule's never been more intense. It's lovely.
And you can talk about yourself. Like,
I mean, who would want to do that, right?
Everyone, back to this one, everyone is playing a part before I let you go. Because, we grow into parts, don't we? And they're probably shaped by our childhood in a huge way.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think especially for women, the presumption is and always has been that you will meet someone and have a child. And I think for women who chose a different path, like Mia, who didn't have her own child and married someone, she's playing the part of to make life easier so people don't make comments. And I think we're getting into, you know, society's getting better at accepting women choosing other routes than marriage and babies, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But I do think that, you know, we'll maybe seeing the last generation of women who feel that's what they have to do and that's what they're supposed to do.
Cat Lady in bookshops now, Dawn O'Porter, and it's a great read from start to finish. It'll keep you engaged, amused and entertained. Dawn O'Porter, great talking to you. Good
Thanks,
luck.
Ray.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Bye now. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Michael Kelly from Grow It Yourself is joining us after 4 o'clock. So if you have any questions about growing fruit and veg, and what you should be doing at this time of the year, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie. On cats, our kitten was just the laziest, easiest kitten ever. And we got a phone call at 3 a.m. to say the neighbours had found her on the road. I didn't realise how much I loved her until I saw her and I sobbed so much. I think I'd realised she was one of the special ones. See, there you go. On other types of pets, as in dogs, Grace says, we tried that music last night and it worked, thankfully. Question for you. Do we have to play the music forever? Or will they settle eventually on their own? There used to be no problem, but for some reason, the night barking is crazy. I don't know the answer to that, Grace. I hope it's not forever. I don't know if I could put up with that. Yeah, I'll ask Susie for you. I'll ask Jenny to ask Susie for you, and I'll give you the answer tomorrow. Now, on jumpers and that sort of thing, my late mother knitted this for me, and there's a photograph, which the radio can't show to you. 20 years ago, she put a collar on it. I still wear it. She was also a fantastic knitter, and that's from Rosemary. And the jumper is the same red, coincidentally, as the one that Delia knitted for Colin Farrell in the Banshees of Inisherin, and it has a similar collar as well. So there, a bit of useless information. The collars were washed. These are the shirt collars. The collars were washed on a Monday, but the shirt wasn't. The collar would probably be stained from greasy hair, hence the need to have it washed, says Mary. And OMG, the yellow coat, the red dress, the clay pipes, the shawlies, and that's just the women. I have an Aran cardigan, which is 30 years old, knitted on Inishmore. I'm a longtime fan of our material heritage, and the costumes were utterly fantastic. In the Banshees of Inisherin. Well done to everybody, Delia and Emer included. So there you go. Anish Toshi now in the Prief Skelton and Nocta La Marion Nihulawan. Good Marion, thank you very much. 51551ray@rte.ie. It was Ingrid Bergman, not Lauren Bacall. Got that wrong, sorry. Ingrid Bergman. Lauren Bacall married Humphrey Bogart. I think they starred in movies together. I'm sure they did, but it wasn't Casablanca, so got that wrong. There you go. Okay, let's have a go at our quiz. See how it's going today. Yes, we have two quizzers standing by and we have a prize. And it's 2 nights stay for two people in Carton House, which is a Fairmont hotel. It's surrounded by 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland out in Kildare. There's lakes, there's a meandering River Rye. Very picturesque. And it's ideal for an autumn stay, and it's just 25 minutes from Dublin. Loads to discover down there, and you can find out more at cartonhouse.com, cartonhouse.com. Good afternoon, Anna Smith. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Hi, Ray.
Good.
How are you?
Good. You're on a day off.
I am.
Yeah. You sound very official. Is that because you're nervous, or is that the type of person you are?
A bit of both.
A bit of both. Right. Okay. And the day off from where?
I work in Temple Street Hospital.
What do you do there, can I ask you?
I'm a radiologist.
Right. So you take the x-rays?
I read the x-rays.
Read the x-rays, okay.
Yeah.
And is every radiologist a diagnostic radiologist?
Every radiologist is a diagnostic. You can have interventional radiologists where they do procedures through little pinpricks.
Oh, yes, right.
And so that's a growing field that's very quite exciting. But I'm a diagnostic radiologist.
Yeah, so you look at it and you go, that's broken or that's not. Or yeah, that sort of thing. Right. Okay. And you're at home and you're cooking the dinner. What's on the menu tonight?
Rigatoni ragu.
Right. Which is the rigatoni? Is that the twisty one?
No, it's a big cylindrical long one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think, I'm not a very great cook.
I think it's the short cylindrical one. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay,
is it? Niamh cooks, so she might tell us what rigatoni is. And who are you cooking for?
My two young boys and my partner, Peter.
Right, okay. And are they, what age are they? Are they excited about Halloween?
I've got a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. The 4-year-old is in full Halloween mode at the moment.
Right, what's he going to dress up as?
We have a fox and a vampire in the mix at the moment.
Okay, hasn't decided quite yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Two very different costumes.
I know.
Yeah. I see you love to run. Are you doing the marathon?
Oh, yeah, I'm not. No.
I love it, but I don't love it that much.
I did the Ackle Half Marathon years ago and I said I'd never do that distance again.
Again. It's nice to just tip away, isn't it? No pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
You're up against Piers Cromwell, which is a very historical name, isn't it, in Coolock. How are you doing, Pierce?
How are you doing? Right,
yeah, two big historical figures there, Pierce and Cromwell.
Contradiction in terms.
Yes. did you ever have a chat with your parents about your name?
I did, yeah. I don't know what they were up to doing it.
Yeah, they were just having a bit of a laugh, weren't they?
Absolutely. I haven't stopped.
And were they into history? Your parents?
No. Just Cromwell always follows you around, as a matter of way.
It does, yes.
Yeah. Why not to repair some fun to it?
Yes, yeah. Just for, yeah. To Heller, to Connacht and all that. Sorry, you've heard them all. You've heard them all, haven't you? Why didn't you call you Oliver? So what are you up to today, Piers?
I'm just waiting to go into college now. I was in work this morning in St. James's and I'm going now to college to finish a degree, hopefully.
Right. What's the degree?
I finished a degree in business studies.
Right. That's a tough old itinerary you have there, working and studying at night.
Yeah, I did it years ago and then COVID came along and I knocked it on the head. So I'm going back for one more year, the last push to get the degree.
Right, okay. And you do a bit of refereeing as well?
Yeah, weekends, my troubles, I go out and I referee some of the soccer around Dublin.
Soccer, is it? Yeah.
So, yeah, it keeps me busy. Trying to keep fit, you know.
Yeah.
And it's good for the mind as well, I suppose, with everything going on with college and work, so.
Yeah, and it's good to, connection as well. You're getting out there, you're chatting to people, all that sort of thing. It's all good. All good. So your line isn't great, Pierce, so we'll forge ahead and hopefully it'll stay intact for us. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you go get a point. If you go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points, and whoever has the most wins, and if the drawing points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck, Anna, and good luck, Pierce. Here we go. Okay, Anna, I'm looking here. The year is 2010.
Okay.
12 years ago. We're starting at the movies. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I will try a short one, please.
Short one, okay. This animated movie, released in 2010, followed a reformed supervillain called Gru and his yellow-coloured minions. Have a listen and see if you can tell us the name of it.
In terms of money, we have no money. So how will we get to the moon?
Well,
is it Despicable Me?
It is. That's Steve Carell as Gru, and you get 2 points. Okay, Pierce, movies from 2010, long or short?
Short.
You go short. This superhero movie sequel was released in 2010 with Robert Downey Jr. taking on the role of Tony Stark once more. Have a listen and see if you can name the movie.
America is secure. You want my property? You can't have it. But I did you a big favor. I have successfully privatized world peace.
Well...
Iron Man,
yeah, I'll take Iron Man. Yep, it's Iron Man 2, but I'll take Iron Man. You get 2 points for that. Anna, music from 2010. Long or short?
Short, please.
Okay, this song released in 2010 was the debut solo single from a Hawaiian-born artist who will go on to perform at the Super Bowl halftime show. Have a listen and see if you can name the singer or the song. Here is your short clip.
I know, when I compliment her, she won't believe me. And it's so sad to think that she don't see what I see.
Is that Bruno Mars?
It is, just the way you are. 2 points for you. Pierce.
Morning.
Long or short?
Morning.
You're breaking up there. Long or short?
Short,
okay. This 2010 song became this American singer's first song to sell over 1 million copies in the UK. Have a listen, and if you can name the song or the singer, here we go.
You just gotta ignite the light and let it shine.
Katy Perry.
It is Katy Perry, yes. Well done. Fireworks or firework. 2 points there. So good from you both, Pierce and Anna. It's down to the wire. Anna, it's your final question and it's on news and current affairs. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I better go short.
You have to go short, don't you? Yeah. This legendary sports broadcaster made his final commentary on the 2010 All-Ireland football final between Cork and Down. Have a listen and see if you can tell us who it is.
I had a lovely part. I'd say the nicest part of all. Sitting down on a good seat, looking at wonderful players. So,
who's that?
Very Irish name.
Yes.
I don't think I have it. No. Micheál Mírtarka.
Go on.
Micheál Mírtarka, something.
Yeah, I'll take that. Micheál Mírtarka. Yes. Close enough for jazz, as they say. You get 2 points. Okay, you're on six. Pierce, under pressure. Din. So you need to go short, don't you?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, the wait was finally over for fans of technology when this product went on sale in the Republic of Ireland in 2010. Have a listen to this clip and see if you can tell me what device they're talking about.
Some users were disappointed that it doesn't play flash videos or have a camera. There are three memory sizes and the more expensive models can access the internet.
Be careful with this now. 2010.
Is it an iPod?
No. The iPod was out a good few years before that. It's the iPad.
Oh.
That's why I said be careful. So it was one of the eyes anyway, but you opted for the wrong one. Sorry about that, Pierce. We're going to send you out a couple of Radar Show mugs. Good luck with everything, because you have a lot on your plate. And lovely talking to you. Thanks, Pierce.
Bye.
See you now.
Thanks very much.
Bye. Anna, well done.
Thank you.
Yes, you and a person of your choice will be going to Carton House, and you can see what's in store for you at cartonhouse.com.
Well, thank you very much.
Enjoy it. Lovely talking to you.
You
better bring Peter. Yeah, okay. Good luck. See
Thanks
you. Bye,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We'll be speaking to Michael Kelly from Grow It Yourself in a moment, but first a bit of U2. There you go, the man of the moment, Bono on U2 and Angel of Harlem. I'm joined in the studio by Michael Kelly, the founder of GIY, Grow It Yourself. And Michael has a lovely, beautiful, attractive new book called The GIY Diaries, A Year of Growing and Cooking. Welcome along.
How are you doing?
Good to see you again.
It's good to be back.
Congratulations on the book.
Oh, thank you.
And I was saying earlier on that it's the type of book I feel is going to be in my life for quite some time, and it'll be well thumbed, and there'll be bits of muck in it and bits of leaves and all sorts of things and notes and all that. And that's the aim of it, I'd
imagine. Exactly. Yeah. Jesus, if there's bits of muck in it, we're doing something right, aren't we?
Yeah,
I really hope that's the way it ends up for people, for sure.
Yeah, and it's a labour, it appears to me like a labour of love. You've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
And this is the culmination of it. I know that you've loads of tomatoes and beetroots to show for your work, but this in a book form is the culmination of it all.
It does feel like that, actually, and really it was kind of pulling together like bits of diaries and articles I'd written and so on over that time as well. So it's a sort of a snapshot in 1 year of those 20 years in many ways as well. So it was a difficult book to put together from that perspective, but had great fun writing it. And Sarah, the illustrator, has done an amazing job, Sarah Kilcoyne, of bringing it all to life as well.
Which gives it sort of an old school feel.
Yeah, exactly. Slightly kind of evocative and homely but with a bit of a modern twist. And we kind of deliberated a bit over that, whether to use photos to kind of, you know, try and illustrate what's happening during the year. But we just kind of felt illustrations were the way to go, and she did a brilliant job.
Now, something like this could appear like a textbook, but it's the complete opposite, because you take us through each month.
Yeah.
But you have a lovely way of writing. There's a casualness about it, and it's not teacher-like at all.
It's lovely.
And then you've peppered through it lovely little recipes as well with seasonal produce from the garden.
Yeah, and who knew? Like, we got... It got nominated for the On Post Book of the Year in the cookery section, which was somewhat of a surprise, but actually really, really kind of gratifying, because I suppose, like, cooking is kind of the ultimate point of all of this and eating the stuff. Yes. So I definitely want to include lots of recipes from myself, from my own kind of kitchen, the recipes I use to deal with the gluts of food that come in from the garden, but also from our head chef down in Grow HQ, JB, has loads of recipes in there as well. So we're really chuffed with that.
And your personality comes through, and I think it's tomatoes are your favourites, although beetroot would give it a good run for its money.
Yeah, it's actually, if I had to pick a favourite, it would be very difficult, actually.
Well, you could say, you know more than I, that tomato's officially a fruit. So you could say your favourite fruit is tomato.
That's
your favourite vegetable is beetroot. Nobody's offended.
Well, true. That's true. I heard your previous guest you talked about offending the cats in the intro. I think it would be very hard to pick a favorite. But I think over that 20-year period, I've got very much more efficient at growing. Like I was very experimental in my youthful enthusiasm for it all when I started, and I still like to try the odd new thing. But I'm also feeling, every year there's maybe 10 or 12 vegetables that are the absolute foundation of almost all the food we eat in the house and almost, all of the veg I grow. So I'm very efficient about making sure I get those ones right at least, and then a bit of experimentation.
You mentioned gluts and you allude to gluts of tomatoes. What do you do with all the, because you can't get through them all when they're in season.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there is a recipe in there for my kind of go-to tomato sauce, because absolutely, I grow about 70 or 80 tomato plants at home, which is so I'd be coming in with a crate, about a metre crate, full of tomatoes. So you can't eat them all fresh.
When you say tomato sauce, is that like a ketchup or a pasta sauce?
I do a ketchup as well, but no, is like a passata, effectively.
Yes, yes,
so
yes,
so yeah. I literally bung a load of tomatoes into a bacon tray, a bit of garlic, some herbs, a courgette, if I have courgettes, gluts as well at the same time. And then you just bake it for about an hour and then blitz it with a hand blender, and it goes in the freezer then, and it's like pastas, pizzas, stews, the whole winter.
Paellas.
Yeah, the whole lot. It's brilliant and full of flavour, and I guess that's the beauty of it, is trying to take that produce that comes in from the garden and extend the season as long as you can.
You write so beautifully about the tomato. It's some parts of the book's like a love letter to the tomato.
Yeah, I am a bit of a it's either a love letter or a fetish at this stage. I am a bit obsessed with them, because they have become so bland.
The ones you buy in the shop.
Now, not
Why
all
is
of them.
That?
Well, they've bred them for durability now, actually. So the vast majority of tomatoes we eat now from the supermarket are really tough skinned. They'll survive for weeks in transit on their way from Holland or Spain or whatever. Whereas when you grow your own, I suppose you're growing varieties which just taste unbelievably good. And
They taste like tomatoes.
Yeah, well, they taste like tomatoes. Should taste, yes, exactly. Yeah. Whereas the ones now are sort of bland sandwich fillers, whereas these are eating them out in the polytunnel warm, they're just the sweetness in them. And if you don't like them, you don't grow them the next year. You'd pick another variety.
And there's your philosophy on life comes through the book as well. Again, not in a preachy way, but it's we have to eat what we have, as opposed to getting it in from Holland or Africa or wherever.
Yeah.
And it has to be seasonal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've kind of got to this point now, which is some of which is led by kind of cookery books, I think. But, there are no seasons. Effectively, it's a monoseason, and we can eat whatever we want at any time of the year. And that's a marvel of logistics and modern science, I suppose. But it deprives us in other ways of the joys of seasonality and the wisdom of the seasons as well. If you think about what nature has available for us at the different times of the year, it's actually what our bodies need as well. You've got the spring greens to boost us in the spring, the summer crops to hydrate us, the berries to get us ready for the winter in the autumn. And then in the winter, we're going underground with starchy root crops and things that warm
garlic,
us and so on.
Leeks,
so I think that seasonality, there's a huge wisdom in it. And we've unplugged ourselves from that only in the last 30 years, really since the 80s. And of course, that mono season comes with huge impact for climate change and so on, because we're importing so much food now as well.
Well, I was a bit shocked to read that despite the fact that when you walk into a supermarket, you would think you have more choice. Mm. We actually have less choice.
Yeah,
when it comes to fresh fruit and vegetable.
Exactly. Yeah, there's the varieties, like, because again, similar with the tomato situation, like everything is done for efficiency and durability, and flavor is, and diversity is kind of is just not at the races at all. So like our potatoes now, we used to have dozens of potato varieties in Ireland in during the potato season. Now we've basically gone down to two or three, like the Carrot Pinks and Roosters, and a little bit of British Queen still, but not much. So, and that's happened with most veg. Like we've collapsed it into one or two varieties that just do really well and are really commercially viable. Mm. Whereas I think when you grow your own food, you get to sort of try lots of different varieties. You also get to try lots of veg that you just won't get in a supermarket, you know.
As I say, it's laid out in the months of the year, and you start with a New Year's resolution, 1st of January, and it is grow your own food.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people have maybe planned to do that and failed. It for some people, and I would include myself here, that it seems like a monumental task.
Yeah.
And how do you persuade people who are dissuaded to do it?
Yeah, well, I suppose I would start by saying I felt like that too. Like when I started off, I couldn't fathom the fact that there was these, like, I came from an IT background, so my instinct was create a spreadsheet, right? No, yeah. So I had this spreadsheet with all the veg that I wanted to grow down one side, and there was like 50 of them. And when I started looking into each veg, I realised each one of these has a different, you know, they're grown in different ways. It's not all like sown spring, harvest in the autumn. They're all different. There's so much to learn. And so, like, it is daunting. But I suppose the stickiness, the thing that keeps people coming back, I think, is that for me, certainly, like I was able to grow food even when I knew absolutely nothing about it. And when I was just like really winging it, hadn't a clue what I was doing, I still managed to grow some food. And that, you know, that was enough to bring me back the second year. And it's then the sort of all the benefits that come out of it, the mental health benefits and the access to this wonderful food. That's what keeps you coming back. I do think there's a couple of fundamental skills as part of it that are kind of, if we can help people learn them. Like we were laughing about this over the summer with you, that the initial problem you had was probably the bag of old compost from the shed. And that's like, that happens.
Yeah. Reading in the book there that the secret to basil is that the basil uses up all the nutrients within 6 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a problem for houseplants and things like that, that I think we forget, I suppose, that this growing medium that we use to grow plants in is actually...
It's like a battery.
Yeah, well, so the plants, exactly. Yeah. The plants are taking their food from that. So in that sense, there's a very real connection between the health of our soil and our own health, because, you know, your soil has to be healthy. You have to replace those nutrients that you took from the soil or from the compost by growing stuff in it. So I think growing your own food teaches you actually that there's soil is actually this incredible substance that you start to really appreciate. At the beginning, I just thought it's just, you know, the soil, like, no big deal, whatever, just stick something in there and hope for the best. Whereas actually you realize, Jesus, the soil is the whole ball game. If you can get that bit right, everything else is easy. And the one thing I would say is that no matter how hard it is, and there is lots to learn, and it's a proper life skill, like any life skill that's worth having, you know, it kind of takes time. But at a basic level, it's very straightforward. Like, it's very easy. You stick a seed in the soil. If it's a carrot seed, it knows how to become a carrot. Yeah, you don't have to whisper any instructions. At that level, it's easy. But that's not to minimise that there's lots to learn still.
The book, as I say, it's a beautiful book, and it's really informative, and it takes you by the hand. And your love for what you do, you know, is there on every page. And so, for example, if you have a bit of lawn and you want to transfer it over to growing vegetables, it tells you how to do that in a very simple way. And if there's anybody in your life, be it yourself or somebody you know, who's been talking about growing their own fruit and veg for years, this is the book for them. The DIY Diaries, A Year of Growing and Cooking, Michael Kelly, as seen on the RTE show, Grow, Cook, Eat.
Yes.
You happy with it? You happy with the book?
I'm absolutely delighted. And just to say, like, as well as the book, there's on our website, GOI's website, which is a not-for-profit, like loads of information out there to help people to, we've got free courses on our website that really take your hand beyond the book as well. So GOI.ie for that. And I'm just like, I'm chuffed, you know, because you spend a lot of time and effort putting into a book like this, and getting it out on the shelves tomorrow is really, really exciting.
Well,
and
congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in, Michael. Thank you. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.